Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. I am Alan Chartok. This week, of course, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett, who has been following some remarkable events. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
So we definitely needed you here today to explain what exactly happened to Shelley Silver.
Wow, it was a bombshell. I mean, seven counts and all found guilty. He's facing, obviously, technically up to 120 years in prison. No one expects him to get that. But he's facing time in prison if he doesn't win on appeal.
Yeah. And how likely is it that there will be a long appeals process?
Oh, I think he's got a lot of money and he's ready to go to the mat. I think he would love to bring, especially this theft of honest services, there were four counts of that he was convicted of. He'd love to bring that all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court if he has to.
Now, remind us what the Supreme Court of the United States had to say when they said that the theft of honest services law was way too broad. And that's what Joe Bruno, the former majority leader, leader of the Senate, got off on.
And that's why he's free. Exactly. The U.S. Supreme Court basically said that you have to prove a quid pro quo, that there was a bribe, so to speak. And, you know, there'll be questions whether that was proven here. A lot of people I've spoken to, legal experts, have said that they thought there was an abundance of reasonable doubt. Now, if this was a civil trial, the standard would have been less, the burden of proof would have been less, and you can see a conviction. But there are people here who thought that the reasonable doubt, that there was reasonable doubt. However, the jury did not, and Sheldon Silver, you know, appeals aren't easy, and my guess is he's going to face some prison time one way or the other.
So let's take us back to the doctor and the mesothelioma, because that was one of those tests you've just been alluding to.
Yeah, the doctor basically said that he referred clients to Silver's law firm, and Silver got a piece of that referral fees, and he did it to curry favor with the speaker. The speaker also gave the doctor $500,000 in grants for his research. However, the doctor says there was never any explicit quid pro quo. He never said, I'll give you the money if you give me clients. And a matter of fact, when the feds wanted the doctor, you know, he signed a non-prosecution agreement to testify, and the feds wanted him to say that he referred clients in exchange for the money, and he refused to sign that. So it is an interesting thing, but the jury thought that there was enough circumstantial evidence, and you can win on circumstantial evidence. They felt there was enough there to convict.
So they didn't have a guy, the doctor was not on the phone with Shelley Silver saying, okay, doc, if you send me clients, I'll send you money from the state legislature. No such conversation.
No, as far as the doctor testified, the farthest he went was he said, even after Sheldon Silver cut the funding, he basically said, I continued to refer clients because I wanted to curry favor with them. Which does not mean Sheldon Silver knew that's what was going on. I mean, people in Albany give campaign contributions. They do all these kinds of things frequently to curry favor with people in charge in hopes that they'll be seen favorably. Whether or not that represents bribery or, you know, extortion, that's up to a jury, I guess, and they said it did.
So Pete Bharara writes a play, Act One. Is Sheldon Silver. Act Two, coming up, the trial of Dean Skelos, the former head man of the New York State Senate, the second man in the room.
Second man in the room, and it's a 1-2 punch, and a lot of legal experts really believe that he, Skelos, is an easier case to make for the prosecutors. They do have wiretap conversations. However, I would argue that the wiretap conversations are the most salacious part of the trial. They're the most interesting, but probably the least legally meaningful, because they don't have any real discussions that we've heard so far saying, we're going to do this for so-and-so in exchange for so-and-so. It's more or less showing the jury that, like, Adam Skelos in particular is a jerk. He's not a nice guy. And as far as I know, that's not illegal, because I know a lot of people would be in prison if it was illegal to be a jerk, myself probably included at times.
Not at all.
But that said, what you have in the Skelos case that you did not have in 3 weeks of the Silver case is you've had multiple people say Dean Skelos asked me for favors, asked me to take care of his son and put pressure on me, and I felt fear that if I didn't do it, then contracts would go south and things would happen. You did not have that in the Silver case. You do have that so far in the Skelos case.
Yeah. So if you're a juror in both trials, you sort of now know about the stink that is coming from Albany. So to what degree do you think, and I hate to ask you to surmise this, you think there are 12 people sitting around in the Shelley Silver trial and they say, boy, that Albany stinks. Guilty!
Well, I think there was a lot thrown at them. And I think, you know, the old expression where there's smoke, there's fire.
Sure. There's
also another old expression in Albany that it's not what's illegal, it's what's legal. That's really amazing. And the legalized, institutionalized corruption. Look, nobody is saying that even if Silver got acquitted, it was not good for him. You know, how he behaved, how he hid money, how he tried to hide it from his financial disclosure forms by saying, put this under the name of my wife so I don't have to report it. How he, you know, benefited from his law firm, from his public work, and also how he had a completely separate law firm he had to deal with that no one ever knew about. I mean, so even had he been acquitted, it was not a good showing for Sheldon Silver. And the same for Dean Skelos. I mean, you know, these guys use their offices to monetize, you know, they monetize their offices, whether legally or illegally. A jury ruled illegally in Silver's case. We'll see what happens with Skelos, but it's not good either way.
So Act One was Silver, Act Two was...
You're going to ask me about Act Three, aren't you?
Act Three is the third man in the room, and that was Andrew Cuomo, who, to his credit, I believe, came out and said, this is a great thing for Albany that this verdict on Shelley Silver came out, you know, justice has prevailed, whatever he said. And nevertheless, we know that what started this whole cycle was the idea that Andrew Cuomo had disbanded the Moreland Act Commission. We don't know why. There are some allegations that he did it because people were getting close to him, we don't know, or that he did it because Shelley Silver asked him to, who knows? But now there is some speculation, journalistically, I saw something in your rival paper recently, that the governor has to be worried because the third act may be the most interesting of all, because there is a question, when somebody gives money to a campaign, are they doing it to get something back? Answer, of course. Prove it is another story. And so now you go out to Buffalo, you see the Buffalo billions, you see all the money that's been given to the city, you find out that there's a bidding procedure that some people think was quite corrupted and only could benefit somebody who was closer to the governor. So does Preet-Bharara go after a sitting governor?
I think Preet-Bharara, at the very least, is toying with the sitting governor. There's no question he's looking. There's no question he wants to find something. I would argue that with the Silver conviction, and if Skelos gets convicted as well, it will embolden him even further. But he is, you know, going all over looking into Cuomo. It started with, why did he pull the plug on the Moreland Commission? Then there were questions about the Committee to Save New York. Now, none of these things have brought any kind of charges, which, you know, and it's been a year, year and a half, so you got to wonder if there was anything there. But now, all of a sudden, it's the Buffalo Billions. So there's no doubt he has the governor in his crosshairs. Whether he finds anything that he can prosecute on, then that's a different story. But there's no doubt he's looking.
Well, Preet-Bharara, to his great credit, has expanded the law. Basically, he said what used to not be illegal is illegal now. There will be people who argue with my language here, but basically that he said, he could have said, we're going to enforce the laws that have always been in place.
Well,
but now I'm fascinated by the idea that we all know that campaign finance is disgusting, the way people try to buy, you know, people's elections and expect something back for it. Will Preet-Bharara now expand the law into campaign donations? And if he does that as a form of bribery, that's real interesting.
It would be extremely interesting. It would probably be hard to prove, because you really do need, in that kind of case, if you actually had no specific evidence, like we said, you know, with Silver, that someone gave a campaign contribution to get a contract or to get something, can you imagine how that would change Albany? You know, the fear it would bring.
And I would think that is exactly what Preparar is out to do.
I think even by us discussing this, he's hoping that even if he doesn't bring charges against the governor or he doesn't bring anything else, that the mere fact that we're discussing things like this will alter behavior. The mere fact that Shelley Silver and potentially Dean Skelos go to prison will alter behavior. Now, we have seen lawmakers go to prison before, and nothing has changed. You know, even during the Shelley Silver trial and the Dean Skelos trial, we saw, you know, not just both, but all three leaders, the governor, Assembly Speaker Carl Hasty, and Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan, downplay the need for additional reforms, saying, well, you know, now it comes down to people and their behavior. Hasty actually dismissed a lot of this stuff as yellow journalism. He blamed it on the press.
So, is that Boss Hasty of the Bronx, who was the political leader in the Bronx, and is that the same guy who's now the speaker?
In other words,
when Shelley goes, they elect a guy who is arguably also very marginal when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, and so it doesn't seem like, you know, after the conviction, they all paid a little bit of lip service to, oh, you know, we need to do better. But you know, when you see statements like they made during the trial that, well, there's not a lot more we can do ethics reform-wise, then it tells you where Albany is.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News. As we speak today, there's still a trial going on. And the presumption of innocence is still there. But what happens if Dean Skelos is not convicted or is convicted? I ask you that because there's a certain potential political jurisprudence that is going on here now. Does it embolden Preparar then to go in other directions if he's got two out of the three?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it's something that if he gets two out of three, you know, his favorite expression, Alan, is stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
And I think we're going to need to stay tuned because we know there are active investigations, not only into the governor, but other lawmakers and former lawmakers as well. So I think you're going to see more. I mean, the fact, though, that in a single year he could lay claim to bringing down the Assembly Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader, I mean, what a message that sends. Now,
but the trifecta, of course, would be, you know what?
But we should also point out that, you know, he did very, very well on Wall Street until the appeals process.
Yes, that's true.
And he had cases overturned that really blew a hole in his reputation as a crusader on Wall Street. This Silver conviction resurrects his reputation again. But, you know, who knows if Silver is able to get it overturned on appeal? You know, a similar thing happened on Wall Street. So, you know, as you said, it's Act One in the Silver case as well. And now we go to the appeal, and we'll see what happens there.
Let me just say that, and respectfully, of course, because there's nobody I think is better at this than you, I don't agree with you. I think what happened is, even if two of them got away with it, that the stink that Barrera showed in his role as U.S. attorney really changed a lot of people and their view of Albany. And I think he gets a lot of credit for that, whether they were found innocent or guilty.
I think, though, if he lost those cases, it would have been a huge black eye. I really do. I think it has raised a lot of... It has raised the profile, but, you know, we've seen this before. You know, Silver with Vito Lopez, Silver with Michael Boxley. You know, we've seen scandal after scandal. We've seen people arrested. We saw the deputy majority leader in the Senate, Thomas Libous, convicted of lying to the FBI, and nothing has changed. And, you know, it takes a lot to change. And I think had these guys, if Silver had been acquitted or wins on appeal, and if Skelos is acquitted or wins on appeal, then I think it emboldens the status quo. Yep. It emboldens, I should say, the status quo to say, see, you know, he overreached, he was overzealous, and we're just going to ignore the message.
Now, if ever there was a time that the iron was hot and a time to really make change, this is the time. Now, we see a bunch of young Turks in the state legislature, in the state assembly, saying, we got to make some changes around here. Will they be squashed like a bug?
I think it's difficult. You know, I know we're not Missouri, but I'm going to say show me. You know, they do talk a good game, the Young Turks, whether they have the power to do it, whether the support is there, not only from their leadership, but the Senate leadership and the governor. You know, it remains to be seen. We'll see how serious they take it. But, you know, certain things, like one of the big issues is campaign finance reform. But, you know, it's almost like it's too late for that in the sense that we now have, because of the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, these independent expenditures. So even if you limit spending and contributions to individual candidates, you know, the donors get around it by donating to these independent expenditures unlimited amounts of money. So we actually see more money in the system, even if we limit it specifically to what the donations to specific candidates can be.
Ken Lovett of the Daily News, let's talk real quickly about Governor Cuomo. I see a different Andrew Cuomo than I used to see. I see a guy who is not looking for trouble, with the exception of his constant attacks on Mayor de Blasio of New York. I see more of a Hubert Humphrey type regular Democrat emerging, you know, HIV and all the right stuff, and turned tail and ran on his educational philosophy, wants to seem to make friends with the teachers. You ever talk to any of those teachers who really hated him?
Yes.
Do you think that it's in their hearts to forgive him and vote for him the next time?
No.
Is that right?
I don't. I think this will help him. I mean, it may not be as hot an issue, so there may not be the desire to get rid of him that there was, but... You know, yeah, but I agree with you. We see a completely different Andrew Cuomo. The first 4 years, we saw a guy who stood up and fought for, you know, and fought. And now it seems if you get enough people to complain and to go public, he backs down. And it really is a different kind of view. We saw it with the minimum wage earlier this year. He kind of poo-pooed the $15 minimum wage. Now he's championing it. We saw it with the teacher stuff now. You know, even fracking, I mean... It seemed at one point he was ready to support it, and then when the environmentalists really put together strong opposition, he ended up going the other way on it.
So let me ask you a question. Years ago, when Andrew Cuomo was in real trouble, going through a really messy divorce with a Kennedy of all people, and I met one of Andrew's best friends, and the guy said to me, "So, you think Andrew is done?" And I said, yeah. And he said, absolutely not. He becomes governor. And now, of course, there's this continual speculation as to whether or not he can ever be a presidential candidate. Now, if Preet Bharara does something that we don't expect to happen, that would end that, I would assume. However, there is still, in most of our minds, the idea that this guy would like to be president of the United States. May seem unseemly to some people who are listening to this, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about that. What do you think?
I think he still has 2020 on the brain, but a lot has to happen. It's so early. I mean, you know, first of all, the Democrats really would have to lose in 2016.
Right.
Because otherwise you have an incumbent
sure.
in the White House.
Right,
so that's one thing. You know, whether he runs for a third term or not, third terms are notoriously bad for New York politicians,
yeah.
and he learned
including
that from
his father, yeah.
exactly. So, you know, it would work out well for him if he really did want to run, that you get to 2018, his second term is up, and he decides, you know what, I'm going to run for president, I'll take the next 2 years in the private sector while running around the country running, rather than necessarily going into a third term, but... I don't know. I don't know if we're there yet. A lot of stuff. I mean, the teachers' unions, a lot of the labor still doesn't like him. And, you know, in a Democratic primary nationally, that's a big deal. But I certainly see him trying to win back the liberal wing of the party, the progressive wing of the party that so distrusts him. And they like what he's doing now. Whether they can ever trust him again, I don't know. That's a big hurdle.
That's a good way of putting it, I think, and one in which I would agree with. So I guess I want to ask you about the other three-term New York governor who decided he wanted to be president. George, who? Pataki is up there in New Hampshire, still hasn't gone over the 1% in the polls. What do you make of that?
I think, look, he's 68 years old. He's always kind of wanted to do this, and he's going to make the most of it as he can. I don't think he thinks he can win. It keeps his name out there. He's on Fox News every so often. He's on CNN. So, you know, I'm sure it doesn't hurt his private business, and he gets to be part of the conversation, at least a little bit. I don't know how big a part, but more so than he would be had he not been running. But, you know, he doesn't stand a chance. And we already saw, I think he's off the ballots, the primary ballots. And is it Florida and Arizona? Two of them knocked him off this week. So
because he didn't make enough.
Yeah, he just doesn't have enough support.
So let's go to the one that everybody watches in New York state politics. And that's the governor and de Blasio, the mayor. The governor just won't stop that. I've been scratching my head for weeks, as you know, Ken, and asking you about this over and over again. What in hell is he doing? Why does the governor keep picking on de Blasio?
Because he enjoys it. De Blasio came
People
out.
Call him a bully, you know.
Yeah.
Chris Gibson calls him a bully. Rob Astorino calls him a bully.
He can't help himself. Yeah. De Blasio came out and basically, when was it, late June, early July, and said he operates by vendetta. He is thwarting my agenda at every turn. And it was a real personal attack. And I've had people close to the governor say to me that it was so personal, it's one that he'll never be able to forgive. And so not only is he whacking De Blasio, he's building up his numbers by doing it in New York City. And he's
De Blasio is not popular.
Where he's not popular, and he's co-opting a lot of the agenda. De Blasio was seen as the progressive darling of New York state politics, and he wanted to be seen that way nationally. And now it's Cuomo who's delivering or trying to deliver, whether it's the minimum wage or having the attorney general investigate police shootings and all these different things. You know, and Cuomo's message is, I don't just talk, I get it done, which is, you know, and so he's using De Blasio as his foil right now, and he's just pounding him.
Well, see, I would make the argument for whatever it's worth, Ken Lovett of the Daily News, I would make the argument that he's hurting himself, the governor. Yes, it may be making De Blasio look even worse than he is, but it's not helping the governor, who appears to be a bully.
It does, to the extent that people are paying attention to it. But I think, in the end, it'll depend what he gets done and whether or not it hurts the city. You know, we saw a little bit of that during the summer when there was Legionnaires' disease, and the two of them held a press conference on the same day about Legionnaires' disease.
Right.
And they gave different information out, and it was embarrassing. And then they quickly worked together to come to some kind of solution, because they knew that this feud was starting now to not only be a political embarrassment, but it was starting to impact public policy and public issues like public health of Legionnaires' disease. I think if you see more of that, then it will be an issue that will hurt Cuomo. But if he comes in on an issue like the homeless, which he says he's going to get involved with next year, and if there's something he can do, then he'll get some credit for it.
You know, I'm going to go back and read Michael Schneerson's book, The Contender, one more time, because I'm a believer that a lot of what we see from De Blasio, Cuomo, goes to character. I got to read that book, because he did a magnificent job in sort of tracing the Cuomo career. So, Ken Lovett, we love having you on the show. I don't know why you continue to honor us and and to show up and to do this as well as you do, but nobody knows more than you do, and we thank you for being here. Is this your favorite time ever in Albany?
With what's going on?
Yeah.
I can't say it's my favorite. You know, honestly, to see people go down like this.
I agree with that, by the way.
I don't think it's a fun thing.
No.
I think if you do wrong, you should be punished. But that doesn't mean you need to take joy in it. It's more of a sad thing, if anything.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting time, certainly. I'm not sure I would put it past, you know, Spitzer, you know, his downfall. At the same time, the Senate coup. I mean, that was an interesting couple of years there as well. But certainly to have both the majority leader and the speaker, you know, go down in flames like this is an interesting time, if a sad one.
Well, Ken Lovett, thank you so much. The Daily News is so lucky to have you. And I have to say, everybody should sit back now and listen to some of our theme music.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.